"Witness," said the thing in the cloak, with a voice that sounded like it was coming from down a long tunnel.
"Witness, trouble."
"No, no, I haven't seen anything," said Hendris, who could see which way the wind was blowing. "Just looking at the rocks. That's all I'm here to do." Then something else came up out of the rocks, not out from between them, but through them somehow. It was a great woman rising up from the stones. And while every miner had that dream once in a while, Hendris had never dreamed about that woman being an ogre. She came out as though climbing through the air, and then she settled upon the rocks and set down what looked like a tangled mass of rope and cloth, until the rope and cloth twisted and moved into the shape of a bony woman in a tattered and dust-covered dress.
"Witness,"
said the thing in the cloak again. "We are not murderers," said the ogre woman.
"We were ordered to preserve secrecy,"
said the bony woman, who was still twisting herself into the shape of a person.
"He has seen you, at least."
"I haven't really seen anything," said Hendris quickly. "Please, please don't kill me." And then, from out of nowhere, a man's voice said, "Good morning, trackers. Did you actually manage to capture anyone, or was this your idea of an evening's entertainment?" Hendris looked up, as did the ogre, the bony woman, and whatever the thing in the cloak was, and saw a nobleman looking down from one of the mine's airships. Hendris had seen the man before, some self-important noble who had come with the black-coated fellows to work in the processing centre. At the time, he wouldn't have minded punching the noble in the face a few times. Now, he would gladly shine the man's boots if it got him out of here alive. "Why are you here?" the ogre called up.
"I have been put in charge of you," the noble called down,
holding up a small crystal wand. It flared with a sudden blue light, and the ogre, the bony woman, and the thing in the cloak all started, then nodded as though they had heard something Hendris had not.
"Understood," said the bony woman. "We engaged ancillary targets last night, but they triggered the collapse and escaped."
"Well done,"
the noble called down, shaking his head.
"I see I have my work cut out for me. Come on, then. Let me land this thing, and we'll get you out of here and cleaned up."
The bony woman gestured at the rock slide.
"The trail."
"Forget the trail," the noble said, waving it away. "The trail tells you where they'll be going, and you'll spend the next several weeks chasing that broken-down airship they've fled in. Maybe that lets you feel like you're cleansing the sins of your evil blood. But, personally, I'd prefer you actually accomplish something."
"You know where they go?" the ogre asked.
"Sometimes the estate gets rabbits," the noble called back. "Damnable creatures get into the food and everyone hates to kill them because they look so cute. You chase them, you'll be running all day. But eventually, they go to ground in their little burrow."
He smiled.
"And then all you have to do is start a fire where they live and let the smoke drive them to you."
The noble looked at Hendris. Hendris knew he'd heard too much. Nobody in fancy clothes said those kinds of things in front of anyone they didn't know and planned to keep.
"Sir," he called up. "Please, sir, I know these tunnels better than anyone. I'm a good miner."
The noble passed his lips.
"What's your name, son?"
Hendris was the same age as the noble, but he swallowed it and said,
"Hendris, my lord."
"Well, Hendris," said the noble, nodding gravely.
"The thing is, I don't really need a good miner."
He gestured, and the last thing Hendris felt was hot pain slashing across his throat. Locke and the team spent the next several days recuperating on a small but very well-furnished tree ship en route to the Elflands. The last time Locke had been on a tree ship, it had been a massive pleasure yacht, and she'd bluffed her way aboard to steal an elven manuscript and stop a war. She'd failed to get the manuscript, succeeded in stopping the war, and had very little time to poke around the vessel itself. This tree ship was pretty, lean and young, flush with bright green leaves that caught the sunlight and pulled the craft through the air. Beams were grown, twining about one another rather than hammered into place, and the air near the leaf sails smelled like freshly cut grass. The doors were wide slats of bark hinging on green stems in the wall, and the beds were lined with soft, spongy moss that was warm to the touch.
It was strange and elven, and also much cleaner than an airship. And if you didn't mind the smell of bark when you were using the bathroom, there wasn't much to complain about. She was leaning on the railing, watching the ground ease past far below, when Captain Thalenia stopped beside her.
"At least this time," the captain said. "You boarded legally."
The elven woman's olive-green skin was lined with age and care, and the crystals in her cheeks glittered like diamonds. Still, she was smiling. "Glad to see you too, Captain." Locke smiled without looking over. "You've changed ships."
"The dragon suggested that I might benefit from a ship that dealt with more important matters than pleasure cruises."
Thalenia settled at the railing. "A promotion, then?"
"I was quite happy sailing around on pleasure cruises," Thalenia said dryly. "But yes."
"You were retired, Locke guessed, and I knocked you back into active service. My apologies."
"Life knocked me back into active service. This is different enough from the trolls and dark fae I still remember on the darkest nights."
Locke shook her head, and at Thalenia's raised eyebrow said, "My people are so busy fighting Imperials, and each other, that we forget that there's a whole other world we know nothing about."
"The dragon helps keep us safe," Thalenia said. "And you've returned his love, who was stolen from my ship. He and I are both in your debt."
Locke grinned. "If you're willing to forgive me stealing aboard your last ship and my associates knocking a hole in the side of it, I will happily call any debt settled." Thalenia nodded, then turned as Kale approached.
"We should be at the dragon's estate within the hour. If you will pardon me, I have docking preparations to make."
"Morning, Captain," Kale said to her as she passed, and then to Locke. "Captain, how's Desidora today?" "Her aura isn't turning all the plants into giant versions of those carnivorous things that eat flies anymore." Kale smiled, then lowered his voice slightly. "Still pissed about Gil's power, thinking she could have killed him if she'd done something different. The usual." "Fair. Derry?" "Moving great, considering he was briefly deceased. Diz and Hessler are still doing tests, but he seems the same as always. Nice, friendly, super strong, immune to magic." Locke nodded. "We've still got that, at least. Ululenia?" "Man, who even knows with Ululenia?" Kale shook his head. "And stop. We got Derry out of there. Didn't stop the return of the ancients. Which I was right about being magic weapons instead of people, by the way. If you're going to beat yourself up for everything you've ever gotten wrong." Locke smiled. "Treasure the little victories, Kale." Kale drew a dagger from his belt and ran it nimbly through his fingers. "We went in next to blind, and we didn't just get Derry out of there. We got information that tells us what the ancients are and how to stop them." "And the enemy knows that we've been there," Locke said. "Which means that getting inside again is going to be even harder." "I've been holding Desidora for most of the day," Kale said. "It's apparently something we do now. Let me know if you need a hug." "I'm good, thanks." Locke grinned. "You'll figure something out." Kale balanced the dagger lengthwise across a finger, then flicked it into the air and caught it. "You usually do. We'll get rid of the ancients, and you can go be a Justicar with Pyvik, or a baroness at Lockenville, or whatever it is you want to do." Locke looked away and laughed to herself. "I was a terrible Justicar. I'd likely be a terrible baroness." "Good dodge on saying what you want to do, Captain. If we can take out that golden hoop Desidora talked about, that should break the gateway," Locke said, and looked over at Kale. "What do you think it is?"
"Me?"
"Hey, you were right about the ancients being magical weapons. Who am I to doubt your statistically inevitable blind luck?" Kale grinned and tucked the dagger and the uncomfortable topics away.
"Maybe Mr. Dragon has something in that library Derry talked about."
The tree ship slowed not long after, and Locke saw a fantastic palace, an estate of white marble and flowing pools and fountains that shone through the thick foliage of the elflands like a diamond hidden in the grass. At first, she thought the estate contained multiple buildings as she saw golden spires rising up and glittering in the pale morning light. Then her eyes adjusted to the scope, and she realized how massive the spires actually were, even higher than the forest around them, with gigantic reinforced beams on their sides, like the crossguards of swords. An even half-dozen spires soared over the rest of the palace, leaving a long, rolling field open, and Locke smiled as she finally figured out what the spires were. Mr. Dragon had built his estate with different places to land. Squinting now, she saw little fairy creatures flying below, landing atop the palace walls and shimmering into human, or more likely elven, shapes. It was the same busy hum of activity Locke would have expected at any noble's palace. Far below on the ground, an elf on a ladder poked at a great hanging pod that was hung like a glow lamp, while somewhere ahead, wagons pulled by large horses carried dark soil toward an airfield where tree ships dug in roots to regain their strength. The tree ship slowed and descended, and Locke headed for the gangplank. Irithel of Leolon was already there.
"I will go fast. It's possible he has guests, and they might not react well to strangers bearing crystal artifacts."
Locke nodded, and when the tree ship touched down, the elf vaulted over the railing before the gangplank even extended. "I had forgotten the beauty of the elflands," came a voice in Locke's head, and she turned to see Ululenia coming out to stand by the gangplank as well. She was in her natural form, a horse with a horn that blazed with beautiful rainbow radiance. She was snowy white, save for the black marks at her flanks.
"I could stay here, I think, and be happy. Perhaps the dragon has a virgin on staff."
"I will make sure to ask," Locke said.
"He is..." Ululenia paused. "I should stay on the ship."
"Why?"
"You were worried, all of you. I understand, and your fears are not groundless. As Dark Fae, I'm different from what I was. I am still me, but..."
"I've known you since I was a child," Locke said flatly. "You don't have to tell me that you're different."
"I'm sorry, little one. I killed the Chimera. That was my second taste of the blood of our people. Each time, it becomes harder to remember who I am. Each time, it makes me want more."
"Will it get better?" Locke asked.
"In time. For now, as I said, perhaps I should wait on the ship," Locke sighed.
"Whatever you think best. Is there any way to..."
"Isafasira!"
came the cry from the ground, and Locke looked over the railing to see Irithel of Leolon coming back to the ship. He was running with easy grace, and his rapier was drawn.
"I need the unicorn and the priestess down here, now!"
"Dangerously close to giving orders," Kael said, as he came to the railing as well. "Which I was given to understand elves don't do."
"Kael, get Desidora. Ululenia, we may have to rely upon your good memory of who we are." She turned back to the railing. "What happened?"
"What happened?"
Irithel of Leolan called up grimly.
"Is the dragon is dead?"